Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Welcome to Webcology here on webmasterradio.fm. This is Jim Hedger from MetaMin.com and Dave Davies from Beanstalk Dash Inc. And it's Thursday, May the 22nd. We kind of have a gumbo show for you today. We had some great guests lined up, but they had to cancel at the last minute. So today, I think Dave and I are just going to troll through the news and give a off-the-cuff take on some of the stuff we see happening out there. And how are you doing today, Mr. Davies?
I'm doing just great. And yeah, there's definitely some interesting stuff going on. So yeah, I'm actually kind of, this will be a little bit different. I'm actually kind of looking forward to this show. I think there's some interesting stuff, and it's good to have an opportunity to actually discuss some of it in a less rushed through fashion.
Well, yeah, usually when we talk about this stuff, we can't actually really get into it because, you know, there's never time. We always have a guest coming on, and we have shows coming up the back end, and, you know, We only have, like, officially a half hour on the network, although we always go over time. But there's some amazing content on Webmaster Radio, so I understand why they have to restrict us. I just don't think it's very fair. Speaking of great content on Webmaster Radio.
Where shall we start today?
Sorry?
Where shall we start today?
Well, first I want to start, you know, I want to give an homage to some of the amazing content we have here on Webmaster Radio. Just before we came on, I was listening to a commercial that led into the show. They talked about Dave Sotelo's show, the PPC Rockstars. You got shows like Strike Point, Danny's Daily Searchcast. And there's another show on Webmaster Radio, the highest rated show that the network's ever had. The SEO Rockstars are coming back, friends. Listeners, long-term listeners, would definitely remember the SEO Rockstars. There hasn't been an original show in a long time, mostly because Todd and Greg are two of the busiest guys in the industry. But as of July 1st, there's going to be a new SEO Rockstars being produced on a regular basis, but it's going to be different folks.
And what do you have any ideas who that might be?
Of course I have no idea. I have no idea. You bring these guys the gold. You bring Webmaster Radio the gold, and they give you the cold shoulder. Darren was teasing me last night on IM, saying that we got the new SEO Rockstars coming up, but he won't tell me who it is. And so I decided to try to do an end run around him, but I called our great producer, Brasco. He won't tell me either. But what they will tell us is it's coming up July 1st. I can guarantee it's going to be an interesting show. I just kind of wish I know who did it. Yeah, baby. It says Darren in the chat room.
Well, at least we know it's going to be good. So, yeah.
Hope, so that's one thing. That's out of the way.
July,
what else do we have out there?
Yeah, waiting with bated breath.
Absolutely. A couple quick announcements. Great conferences coming up in the near future. SMX is happening in 2 weeks in Seattle. Then SES Toronto is happening just under a month from now. Two great shows. If folks are in the area or want to be in those areas, they're highly recommended. I think SMX is almost sold out, but folks should go check the site, see if there's any tickets left. If there is, definitely worth snatching up. Let's dive into some of the stuff that we have happening out there in the web ecosystem today. We have Google Sites. We have the top 10 Google failures. We have that magnificent failures. We have the Microsoft rebate program, fake news, and of course we just got to talk about Yahoo. But let's save Yahoo until the end because that one's absolutely silly. I mean, we could talk for hours about how stupid Yahoo has gotten. But let's sort of like get into this Google Sites thing. Dave, have you heard about Google Sites?
I have. I've now gone in. I have set up an account. I've just given it a preliminary test out. Saw what I could come up with. Looked at the code in the back end. I started by taking some notes on what I was encountering. My notes ended up it consisted of one word actually. My entire set of notes on it. That word was crap.
Crap.
It's really just like if you look at the code, I find it really quite funny. I have never seen code so un-search engine friendly.
Really?
In my life, it's just brutal. Now maybe there's some things I was missing because I was just I just heard about it, had to go in there, take a look around and stuff. So maybe I missed something, but I can't see ever wanting to use it for anything but like my first website back in like the late 90s was GeoCities, and it was just like I just wanted to get my resume online. I could see maybe using it for that, where you're actually not hoping to get any real traffic or you don't need anything really attractive, but but other than that, it was it's pretty bad. No, I mean this is kind of their first version, so I shouldn't be too hard on them. They may come out with something else. As I say, I just had to kind of rush through it, so maybe I'm missing something. I'm going to play around with it a little more after the show, and next week, if I'm wrong and I find out some really cool stuff, I'll be the first to admit that I was totally wrong. But from my first looks, it was it's pretty bad, although I would still say, it's probably something they're going to stick with, so it's worth going in there and testing out and sort of watching it as it evolves.
Well, for folks who haven't surfed over to Google Sites yet, what this is, it's a sort of a content management system run in the cloud. It's server-side software. It's a content management system for site building or page creation. Arnold Zafro over at Search and Journal today likened it to GeoCities, and I guess, Dave, you back that up. It reminds you of the early GeoCities?
Yes, it does. A lot like it.
No domain is required. This is for total newbies, people who have not built a website before, who don't know what they're doing, and just want to get something up there. Dave, you've actually looked at the source code. You say it sucks. And according to Michael Martinez, who made a comment over at Search Engine Journal today, apparently Google has, to quote Michael, graciously implemented the automatic rel nofollow tag on all embedded links. So you're not going to get a lot of link juice out of it either.
Of course they're going to think of that probably again.
Yeah, after the blogger fiasco, for sure.
Because what the first thing, a bunch of webmasters would be doing, hey, sweet, I get a link on the Google.com domain. But, yeah, I mean, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope they come up with something unique out of all this that maybe I'm missing. There were a couple unique features. I'll give it this. It's incredibly easy to use, and you can do some stuff like, add attachments and stuff that, your everyday, my grandmother wants to put up something just to put some pictures there. Great. She's going to have no problem using it. For users at that level, perfect. Because they're not actually hoping to get, she'd just be sending me a link going, here's where, the update on our family is. But at the same time, if that's the only people that it really appeals to, I have to ask, what's Google's point here? In that the only reason I can see them building something like this would be to grab more of the web that they don't, they're not currently indexing. Well, if this is the only stuff that's there, they don't need to index it. So, this is stuff that just isn't isn't even relevant to Index. It shouldn't show up in search results because it's meant for me and my dad and, you know, a few other members of the family to come and see. So I don't quite understand what their point is, but again, I'll play with it a little more, hopefully see a little more, you know, find the secret that I just happened to be missing thus far that makes it some great thing. One thing I did really like about it as well is you get to choose whether this is something that is private or public. And I did think that was a nice touch that they added as a feature so that I can create it. You know, obviously they won't index it in that case, and you'll need to log in to see stuff. So, you know, that does, from that perspective, I think that was a nice feature for them to add. So to give a little pat on the back and something that overall I don't particularly care for. I would imagine when this top 10 list comes out that we'll be covering in just a second, when this top 10 list comes out in a year or two, I'm betting that we'll probably see Google Sites included in that list.
Well, speaking of the top 10 list of Google failures, that's kind of like our next topic. Tom Spring at PC World yesterday published an article, Top 10 Google Failures, where he looked at a number of the products that Google's put out over the last 10 years. One of them's worked, or two of them have worked really well, those being search and PPC. But there's a number of other products that we might remember Google brought out that simply haven't gone anywhere. Running down his list from 1 to 10, and we might stop at a couple of them, or we might get back to a couple of them, but the list from 1 to 10 is the Google X homepage, which was an homage to OS X, Google Catalog, Google Video Player, Web Accelerator, Google Answers, Google Coupons, Google Voice Search, Google Viewer, and Google Checkout, and, of course, Orkut. I want to add another one. Whatever happened to Google Base?
You know what? I get where you're coming with that one. I'm gonna go with Google. I'm gonna defend them a little bit here.
Oh, this will be fun.
When it does come to Google Base, if you had asked me or you'd mentioned that about 2 months ago, I would have been all over agreeing with you here. We discussed on the show 3-4 weeks ago, I just kind of touched on it. We found it when we happened to be searching for, I think the phrase we'd looked up was used cars, Utah or something. They were starting to draw some Google-based results into it, right up at the top with a drop-down so you could select a variety of different features. I think it just kind of got relegated, gathered some dust, whether that was just in preparation to launch some new features. But I think we're going to be seeing a lot more Google-based influencing some specific product-based phrases. Down the road, they're obviously testing it in the auto area right now, but it seems to be happening we happen to be looking up Utah, but did do some searching. It's going broader than that, but it only appears, or at least I haven't found anything outside of that specific sector that it's being tested in yet. But anyway, so just to give them a little pat on the back, but I mean, other than that, it's been an absolute, you know, it launched, added some stuff in there, and you know, just to, for clients or whatever, just to see, and nothing, right? It was absolutely useless. So, but anyways, just to give them a little defense after I, you know, rake them across the coals. And
there's a lot of useless stuff that Google brings out, and I don't think it's for lack of trying or for lack of planning or for lack of technology. I mean, some of the stuff on this list was actually pretty cool. I remember Google Video Player, when it first came out, before they bought YouTube, was pretty cool. The Google X homepage, which existed for all of one day, was kind of neat. And again, it was an homage to Macintosh's OS X. Google Checkout could have been kind of cool if they didn't piss off eBay so bad when they tried to introduce it.
Yeah.
The Google Catalog... Well, that was. I remember Google tried to do a foray into being a comparison search engine, and that kind of was Google Catalog, and that didn't work out. What I find most interesting about this list isn't exactly what's on it, but the areas that Google's tried to get into where it found a competing product was doing better or had better market share or was just more loved by computer users, or they just weren't able to service something. This is like arguably the most successful internet company of all time, unable to enter a market. And the reason I'm interested in this is because Google's kind of getting this reputation for being the Microsoft of the 2Ks. Back in the 90s, when Microsoft wanted to do something, it just went and did it. and, you know, haven't helped you if you stood in their way. Google, on the other hand, is trying to go off and just do it, but seems to be running into roadblocks when it tries to take on topics or technologies outside of its core competency, search. What do you think about that?
Well, you know what, I agree, and a huge advantage that Microsoft had going, you know, back in time, as we've done here, is that Microsoft basically, because they controlled the operating system, got to basically, A, package it on every single machine that was, I mean, at the time especially, Macs were, I don't know, they didn't even have the market share they do now, and I mean, Microsoft is still absolutely dominating that market. But they could basically just create an environment where you just use theirs. I mean, Internet Explorer is still the vast majority. I use it to test sites. That's about it. I mean, I prefer Firefox, but you know, most users still use it, and that's because it's bundled with. So that's a huge advantage that they had when they came out. You know, Windows Media Player or something. They put that in there. Well, why are you going to need something else? Or you're at least going to use that because it's the default when you happen to click on a video link, right, or something like that. Google doesn't have that. They don't have that control. So they're kind of launching things out in a real world competition where you have to come up with something better than, you know, what's already in existence. So when they're trying to go head to head with somebody, who's starting out ahead, they're having to rely on their user base to adopt it and adopt it quickly. And I think that's where they hit some hurdles. At the same time, I have to give them huge props for trying a lot of this stuff. And I mean, a lot of these things are just coming out of, you know, they give their employees some time to just sort of, you know, play around and pursue their own individual interests. You know, so are born, you know, many different features, functions, you know, Google Earth, Google Moon, that you can just sort of go in and play around with and take a look at. So, you know, I can't really begrudge them for some failures. I kind of have to give them some props for launching in and just really trying. Of course, there's going to be some failures. There's been some huge, huge successes, and some of them have been born out of, you know, out of some of these failures, and they failed with video. That's fine. So they just bought. You know, if you can't win, just acquire. You know, but they made that attempt. They saw the value in it one way or another. They won in the end. So, you know, kudos to them for sticking with it and trying and putting stuff out, willing to take that failure. They've never out of any of this really gotten a black eye. You know,
except
still,
with Orkut.
You know,
well, Orkut is kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, okay. Okay, valid point. you, there's definitely the exception to the rule right there. But, you know, most of this stuff was, you know, I mean, a web accelerator. Okay, I didn't even install it. But, you know, some of it was a little silly. Some of them were good ideas that just didn't take off. Google Answers, good idea. I mean, Yahoo's been quite successful with it, or certainly more successful with it. You know, Google didn't quite hit the nail on the head there. But, you know,
well, Google's
at
problem
the same
with Google
time,
Answers was you had to pay to get the answer. Yahoo
see,
just that, opens
that's
up, anybody can answer.
And Yahoo doesn't. And I mean, I've used Yahoo Answers. I'm sure you have too. I've answered questions in there. I've asked questions in there. Google Answers, I just quite honestly never. I mean, I went in there just a look from an interest perspective, but I never actually actively used it. Didn't actually actively answer questions. And not because I'm a cheap bugger. I'm happy to pay for information if you're going to give me the right information. But, you know, why? You can just go to Yahoo, and somebody will answer it well. They're free. So,
you know where Google has succeeded in these products and new product introductions? It's when it can provide good products for free. Google Docs is actually very successful. It's not nearly as successful as Microsoft Office, but that's, you know, because it hasn't been adopted by as many people. But Google Docs, unless you want to get it all tricked out for your organization, it's free. It's a free productivity suite. Look at what they did with Urchin, making it into Google Analytics. Now, while they may lose your analytics from time to time, as they did a couple weeks ago, it's kind of embarrassing. It's remarkably successful. It's given away for free, and of course, it supports their advertising program. So it's a a conduit to a revenue source for them. Gmail, insanely successful, totally free, supported by advertising. So every time Google's been able to find a way to contextually place text-based ads against a product, it's been able to give away that product for free. Free is the web's second favorite four-letter F word. And free gets the goods. Free gets people coming in. Google's trying to get those people engaged as members, hence your login. You become a member. You store your information on their servers, called cloud computing or server-side software. And they, again, keep you coming back for more with great free applications. But when they go the paid route, as they did with Google Answers, it doesn't work. Nobody cares. Nobody wants to pay.
No.
There's too many free options.
Why would you when there are alternatives to get the information for free? It doesn't. I mean, you know, you bring up Google Docs there. Great example. They went out. It could have been on this list, but it was successful, so we all consider it a success. We don't discuss it very much. But you're right. I mean, I use that on a regular basis. I communicate with some of our resellers on it just to keep the pricing updated, and I can, you know, they can allow just them to log into it, and it serves a great function. And it was adopted, so it didn't make this list. But if it hadn't been adopted as widely, and people going, oh, no, we like our Microsoft products, it probably would have topped this list as one of the biggest failures. So they throw 1,000 things at the wall. Some of them don't stick. Such as life.
Funny you should mention Microsoft and product failure in the same sentence. the next thing I want to jump onto is Microsoft's cashback rebate program from LiveSearch. But before we do, we've got to get some cashback. We got to do our own cashback rebate program for Webmaster Radio and let them go to commercial. I'm getting a message from studio saying they need to take a few minutes to pay some bills. This is Jim Hedger from MetaMen.com and Dave Davies from Beanstalk Dash Inc. You listen to Webcology and WebmasterRadio.fm. Stay tuned. We'll be back after these messages.
Sit tight and don't move. Webcology. We'll be back after this short break. Don't be fooled by your web analytics. If you think your web analytics are giving you all the information needed to manage your paid search accounts, you'd be shocked to see what they're not telling you. How are you tracking sales received over the phone that resulted from your PPC ads? Now, you can track call-in sales by campaign, search engine, and keyword with Engine Ready Call Analytics. Optimize top spending keywords with more accurate tracking and achieve higher PPC profitability. Get started now tracking your PPC call and sales with Engine Ready Call Analytics. Visit EngineReady.com to see how easy and inexpensive accurate call and tracking can be. EngineReady.com.
Need help improving your PPC campaigns? Tired of spending all your time swamped with spreadsheets and manual updates? Turn to Adapt SEM software to optimize your campaigns and to reach your goals. Adapt SEM is one of the most affordable and reliable tools on the market for improving PPC campaigns. Adapt SEM not only optimizes your bids, but also gives you keyword suggestions, competitive research, and helps to test ads, all in one place at flat rate pricing and no long-term commitments. Learn how Adapt SEM can help manage your PPC campaigns better. Check out our free webinar at adapt.com/webmasterradio. Sign up now for a free personal tour. adapt.com/webmasterradio.
A rose by any other name would still be the same.
Move over, Shakespeare.
You need to differentiate yourself from your competition. Do it by aligning yourself with a company who has earned the trust of Jupiter Media, the NHL, and Lionsgate Films, among others. Moniker.com is the most secure ICANN-accredited register on the planet, offering you domain registration, hosting, domain sales, and acquisition services. Wrap that up with 24/7 support. That's your winning combination. MONIKER.com. More than a name.
Dateline. Search Engine Strategies in New York. March 18th, 2008. The date where the pursuit of PPC would begin.
What's the name of your show? What's it going to be?
We don't have a name yet. PPC Rockstar.
PPC Rockstar. PPC rock stars.
We're going to have guests. We're going to have the biggest PPC people in the industry. People listening in the audience can give the information about their landing pages, about their sites, their ad campaigns, and we will tear it apart on air and give them advice that we know will make them a lot of money right away.
PPC rock stars. Live broadcast Mondays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, or on demand anytime inside the advertising channel. Only on webmasterradio.fm.
Just getting your feet wet on the internet? Then dive into our stream.
Webmasterradio.fm.
We're the coolest place around. Webmasterradio.fm. We're everywhere.
Commercials off. Now back to Webcology. Only on Webmasterradio.fm.
Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Welcome back to Webcology here on WebmasterRadio.fm. It's May the 22nd. It's a gorgeous day outside today, and we got some pretty stupid stuff to talk about.
Well,
I don't understand this cash back from live search scheme. Like, seriously, what's the deal here? Wasn't this tried like a few years ago with iOne, where they will pay you to use their search engine?
Yes. I'm going to give the benefit of a doubt here in whether this will work for them or not. And maybe that's just because I've read a bunch of negative stuff, of course, on this. And sometimes I just like to play the devil's advocate. And now we're in the opportunity in recent times, last few years, to actually view Microsoft as an underdog. I always like to vouch for them, and there isn't a lot of news on Ask, so I can't put my tie myself to them. It could work. If you give me two choices, if you go to store A or store B, the price is going to be exactly the same, but store B is going to give me some money. Which store am I going to use? I view it kind of similar to. If you offer me credit card A and credit card B gives me air miles, which card am I going to choose to use? I'm going to choose the one that will give me something in the end. So, from that context, I view what they're doing as a potentially good idea. It may end up entering into their top 10 list in a year, depending on how it goes. Something that I don't like about it, the list is, there's quite a lengthy list, but two things that I don't like about it is this going to bias their search results towards these sites? I mean, that's always potentially an issue when we view something like this where there's a potentially huge conflict. And two, how long are these merchants going to actually stick with it? If people start going, I know Home Depot's on the list. If I choose, I'm not going to go to Home Depot, I'm going to go to Microsoft, I'm going to search Home Depot, and here's the product that I want, find it in Microsoft and click through there just to make sure that I get this discount, how long are the merchants going to deal with that?
Well, it's not the merchants who are giving you the discount. It's Microsoft itself that's paying you the rebate. Home Depot, you're going to be paying Home Depot 100% of the purchase price. Home Depot is going to get 100% of your purchase price, and they're not going to give you anything back except the product that you purchase off them. Microsoft, on the other hand, is going to be tracking your purchase, and it should be noted, this is only for 700 selected retailers, and as you said, if you go to the search.live.com/cashback page, you can see a list of the hundreds of stores that are involved in it, everything from 1-800-Florals all the way down to Zephyr Sports and Zappos, the t-shirt company. So it's got to be one of these 700 stores. Can it be 60 days to process the rebate? I guess Microsoft wants to make sure that products aren't ordered and then just returned.
Right.
And again, the rebate's coming from Microsoft's pockets, not from the retailers themselves.
Okay, now, that maybe I went with under the logical sort of assumption, and I'd read a couple articles on it, didn't catch that one. my viewing of it was from the logical online stores have affiliate programs. Basically, if I was Microsoft, I'd view it that way and show these. Admittedly, with this new piece of information here at my disposal, I'm going to do basically a complete 180 on my first take on it and go, as Microsoft, this is probably one of stupidest things I've ever heard. Yeah, okay, yeah, that's it. you caught me on air going, oh, my God, okay, yeah. Didn't view the full story, and I mean, that just can't, that absolutely can't last. Now it actually works to a great disservice to Microsoft that I would then go Home Depot product and go through rather than just going straight to Home Depot.
This is one of the big WTF moments of the week, right?
Pardon me?
This is one of the big WTF moments of the week. Like, seriously, what the heck are they doing?
I mean, you hit the nail on the head. That's pretty stupid. And the thing is that going like one? If they were at least running on a zero sum, as I kind of assumed that they were, that you know they were just giving what the merchants would give. You know, that makes kind of sense because it's getting me there. And you know, maybe hopefully I will continue to use live search after that. You know, I'm already there. I've already done my product search. I found what I wanted pretty fast. So you know, let's use this again. In this context, I think they're paying a large amount. Now, I may not be your typical searcher, and, you know, maybe one day we should have a show and actually talk to some typical searchers about things like this so that, you know, we can, you know, get their context on it. But were I looking for a product, I knew Microsoft offered a discount. You know, I mean, I'm like anybody else. If I can save some money and it doesn't cost me a lot of time, sure, I'll do it. I still use Google, but I'd go to Microsoft to purchase this product from you know, somebody that I was going to purchase it from. So really, I think this is going to cost Microsoft money. I'm going to end up going back to Google. Some people would stay if they found the search results relevant, but I don't know if they're going to capture enough there to make it worth it. Now, time may tell. You know, I hope for Microsoft's sake, I'm wrong. You know, and that you're wrong, and that all, you know, everybody's wrong. And that they all of a sudden can capture great search market share. Downside being, I don't think their results are more relevant. So, you know, I don't know what your feelings are on that.
Well, we know that Microsoft needs to differentiate itself in the market big time. That's actually a pretty good segue into the April 2000 search share rankings that Nielsen released the other day, which shows that Microsoft only has 9.7% share of searches in the U.S. market in April 2008.
Yeah.
So they haven't broken the 10% mark. Actually, they had in the past. They've fallen below the 10% mark. As a matter of fact, since the same period last year, Microsoft's seen a 30% growth in the number of searchers. But the industry itself, search itself, has grown much larger and faster than that, so Microsoft has actually lost a bit of ground.
Yeah, these ones are always, every time I see statistics like this, I do kind of view them in a really kind of odd way, and I'm sure you can agree, where we're looking, is Microsoft losing ground? Yes, relative to Google, but in the end, they've gained. Like, you know, we put these different things on, you know, on the internet and on web properties than we do on real world properties. Where if I said, you know, well, my company, we had 30% growth over last year in the number of clients. That's a good statistic. You know, I'm happy with it. Everybody'd be happy with it. And you know, if Ford came out and said we sold 30% more cars this year, their share prices would go up. Microsoft comes out, they have 30% more searchers. But relative to Google and the number of searchers online, they're still down relative to 100%. So it's viewed as a failure. So I find it's a weird set of statistics to look at. But you know, given their recent actions, we can obviously see that they're hungry to capture a larger relative percentage of the search market share.
Well, I'm going to run down this list really quickly. We got Google at 62.0%, so 62% of search shares in April 2007. Yahoo, 17.5%. MSN, or Live Search, at 9.7%. AOL Search at 4.3%. Ask.com at 2.1%. Now, this is where the list gets much more interesting to me. The top five has been the top five for a couple of years now. In this order, Google, Yahoo, MSN or Live, AOL, and Ask. It's been that way for a long time.
Yeah.
Underneath that, though, there's five other search tools that... Well, when I saw this list, this is what grabbed my attention, not what the big five are doing. but what the lower five are doing. Number six is something called My Web Search. It's a child-friendly, fully featured, standalone, filtered internet browser. So this is the ultimate net nanny. My Web Search accounts for 0.7% of all searches in the U.S. in April 2007. That's almost 1%. That's 57 million. 57,000 searches. That's a lot of market share.
Yeah.
The next two, number 7 and 8, Comcast and AT&T, two ISPs, two telecommunication companies.
Yeah, these ones surprised me that they were as high up on the list as in number of searches as they were. Interesting.
Me too. But then I went and looked at the AT&T WorldNet search page, which incidentally is fed by Google. So search users here are looking at Google results, but they're looking at it from a different sort of home page, which I actually, if I was an AT&T user, this might well be my search default.
Yeah, I like they have your basic Google, but then yeah, right on the home page, a lot of different options right off the bat on how to look things up. I think it's great for your average user. Or people just kind of getting started up, where they may have used just the typical Google homepage, and this gives them that feature where they can just do your standard Google web search. But at the same time, it gives options in ways to search for things you might not know about automatically if you were just a standard. You know, most of the listeners, you and I, we're used to the advanced search, and you know, half the time we can just enter in different parameters into the address bar to get different things that we want to see, 100 results on a page and stuff like that. But here we've got it built right into the homepage, just to let people know that it is there, and I like it.
Yeah, I think it's a very cool merge between a portal website and a membership information search page. AT&T did a really good job. It's a very sparse page. It's you'll find anything you want looking there, but I think it's mostly useful only to AT&T customers. But you know what? There's enough of them that they have a 0.3% share of searches, or 28,059,000 in April 2008, showing a 200.9% growth over April 2007. They're the fastest growing of all the ones on the list, and I think what we get from AT&T WorldNet Search isn't so much that a telecommunications company or an ISP has their members searching on it, but a very cool way to set up a search portal.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I mean, people will, we've seen it virtually, most ISPs anyway have some sort of search homepage, but for AT&T to actually They've done it successfully, where there is growth in the user base actually using it, rather than leaving it and just going straight to one of the engines themselves. Kudos to AT&T for providing something that their users are obviously sticking with, opposed to just switching over to Google directly or something like that.
Well, and just to throw the number out there again, that's 28,059,000 people who conducted a search there in April 2008. That's well, it's like the state of California. that's pretty damn big.
Yeah, no, that's phenomenal. It's the 200.9% growth that impresses me to pull that off in a year. I mean, really, from that context, on the growth perspective, they're the most successful in the entire top 10.
And just to round out the top 10, we have Nextag Search, a comparison search shopping engine, and MyWay Search, the one that I found the funniest, sleaziest, and stupidest of all of them. Yeah, it's an IAC property, go figure. It's an IAC property. It's a search information and personalized portal run by IAC, the owners of Ask.com. And the organic search actually defaults to Ask.com, but for some reason doesn't appear to draw results. It gives you the option to search Google and Yahoo results as well. Its tagline reads, "No banners, no pop-ups, no kidding," but there are lots of Google and IAC-sponsored or paid ads to surf through when you're looking for results that are found way near the bottom of the page. And they've lost the most. They've declined negative 37.6% since April 2007. They have a 0.2% share of searches. 17 million or so searches conducted there. It's fairly small, but it's still on the list, on the top 10.
Do you think they will be next year when this comes out?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, like, who knows what's going to happen with the IAC? We know that it's in breakup mode right now. It's separating many of its internet properties from its retail and online advertising properties. Who knows what happens? It's hard to say. Ask.com is still a phenomenal search engine. Not certain they're going to be investing a lot of research and development money into it, but they did just buy the owners of Dictionary.com, so they're clearly still interested in being a reference source. But for My Way Search, no, I don't think they're going to be here next year. I think they kind of suck.
Now, if I can segue us out for just a second, you touch on reference sources there. I guess we have a recent example of why reference sources and accurate reference sources might be something that all journalists should take a look at.
Oh, dude. Okay.
With our report on the 13-year-old who used his father's credit card to apparently get Xboxes and hookers.
Yeah, why didn't we think of this stuff when we were 13, eh? Jeez. Well, the problem with this story is it didn't happen.
Time.
You know, this is the kind of thing that you go to school. Hey guys, guess what? I got a hold of my dad's Amex, and I got to get myself a couple of hookers and play Xbox with them. I mean, this didn't happen. what it was, there's a UK marketer, Lyndon Antcliffe. One of his clients is a website called money.co.uk. Well, the way it works is if you can get a bunch of folks leaking back to your website, especially authority folks like the mainstream news, you're going to get a lot of Google juice, you're going to get a lot of traffic, and you're going to get a lot of people talking about you, just like we're talking about Lyndon and his client, money.co.uk, right now. This is a tough one. Because I remember when the story came out, and I looked at it and went, oh, my God, wow, that's really stupid. That's really funny. He played Xbox with them. and then I forgot about it. Yeah, it's, you know, one of those news of the weird stories. But a couple days later, it came out that Lyndon had just sort of made it up. Fake news. Didn't happen. The story went viral, and it got reported as real news, but it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A report on that
went
up on
spin.com. I mean, Matt Cutts has entered the discussion, and you get into the issue of where is the responsibility here? Was this a legitimate tactic to use? What are your thoughts on that? Do you think, as far as an SEO, internet marketing, viral marketing tactic, was this a legitimate, sort of thing to do, or quasi-legitimate? And do you think that the site itself or the SEO should be penalized for doing something like this?
Well, let's see. Comment on this went up at spin.com, and it's gone about 50-50 down the middle in the SEO community, with a number of people saying, no, this isn't cool, and a number of people saying, what? It's marketing. It's just clever marketing. It's a tough one. I'm going to fall on the side of saying it's not cool. Not because I don't think it's clever. I thought it was remarkably clever. Reading the story, it was written tongue-in-cheek. The person writing it was obviously, obviously going out of their way to write in a specific style for news, but they weren't a news writer. And as an editor, you can kind of see that, right? But I'm a blogger who works really hard on trying to present accurate information. I'm a blogger who gets treated sort of like a journalist sometimes. And how to say this properly, the rule in search blogging, and this is something that I think the search world owes to Danny Sullivan, has always been act like a journalist, act like you're giving the most accurate information possible. Now, Lyndon wasn't acting as a blogger here. I want to make that straight up. He created a fake article that went viral, got picked up by mainstream got picked up by the mainstream news. It was published on his client site, money.co.uk, originally, got picked up by the mainstream news. Money.co.uk is seen as an authoritative financial advice site in the UK, and they put up a fake news story. They allowed this to go up. As a blogger slash pseudo-journalist, I think the accuracy of things that we find on the Internet is critically important. This is the world's information source. This is supposed to be like the library or the world's largest living encyclopedia or something like that. At the same time, it's a public space. I mean, heck, if I want to go outside and say the Queen eats jelly beans, I have every right to. It's a public space. I bet you she does, too. She doesn't share, though. I can say that on the radio.
You know, I think you bring up a good point there, in that, yes, it is a resource. Yes, we go there. At the same time, and you know, I'm sure I'm not the first to bring up this point, we do have other news sources. I'm not going to name any specifically here, but we all know probably a large number of them that are either so biased in their view or are very clearly satirical in their nature that if you hit any one thing, you wouldn't know that, or they're so biased that if you went over their whole site, they have such a leaning towards one angle or another that it isn't really news anymore because they're filtering out all of one side, be it left or right wing. There's you know, certainly sites on both sides that do that. So how much worse is this than something that is actually providing accurate information from such a slant that it is news? I would view that as almost worse because it is news. You know that there are pieces of it that are accurate, so that makes it even more misleading that you're only getting this one side. And I mean, every single one of us does that to certain degrees. There are obviously resources that do it much worse, though.
Negligible. Like, seriously, it's not going to damage any blogger's reputation. It's certainly not going to bring the reporting of news into disrepute. It's kind of like a paper cut, as opposed to a slash with a sword, right? But what happens when you get thousands of paper cuts, millions of paper cuts? Well, then the credibility of the industry really does die. Now, I will name names. I do see things like Fox News as a sword blow to the integrity of journalism. I see the direction CNN's moving in, which is like entertainment, not news, mm-hmm. as a sword swipe to the credibility of journalism. I see things like this fake news story, again, it's like being bitten by a Texas red ant. It'll hurt, but it'll go away in a second. But if you get bitten by a million Texas red ants, you're dead.
You know, I mean, then that's for sure. And on that tangent, I think the largest black eye out of this entire thing will end up being to money.co.uk. Who's going to trust a source by them? But you sort of fall back on that, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. And if something positive can come out of this, I think it will be towards the reporting community and publishers, especially online, to go, okay, maybe we shouldn't just visit this one site and go, this is news. You know, this did happen necessarily. And maybe force us all to take a look and at least try and verify and back it up, even if it's just finding a couple other resources that have found the same story from different angles. Or the same story, but from different sources, so that we can at least verify that this is, you know, something accurate. I mean, even, you know, when we were for our segment earlier on Microsoft, I'm sure you did, I know I did, I looked it up in a few different places, read a few different opinions, you know, got my own, but to get a grasp of things, obviously missed still the portion where it was coming straight out of their pocket. But still, you look it up on a few places, then you know it's true because all this information is coming from different sources. Here, people were just trusting an individual source, didn't verify it with second sources, went in, treated it as news, unfortunately, or, you know, sort of a little blow to them, but whatever, they can either take that page down now or just put up a recant going, all right, we were fooled. Here it is. This is totally fake news, and you know, an interesting link bait, although, you know, we agree or disagree with it for that use. But who's going to trust money.co.uk again? And who's going to link?
Perhaps not Google. Matt Cutts weighed in on the story over at Spin, and I'm going to just read a very quick bit from the from his reply. My quick take is that Google Webmaster Guidelines allow for cases such as this. Google may respond negatively to other misleading practices not listed in their Webmaster Guidelines, like tricking users by registering misspellings of names, being distracted by IM, we're being told to wrap up soon. And you're right, Dave, we're probably not going to get to Yahoo in this segment. That's too bad, because that was going to be a lot of fun. Anyway, Matt Cutts reacted. He's saying it's not safe to assume that just because a specific deceptive technique isn't mentioned on Google's Webmaster Guidelines and fake news stories are not mentioned on Google's Webmaster Guidelines doesn't mean that Google approves of it. As Matt Cutts says, there's not much more deceptive or misleading than a fake story without any disclosure that the story is a hoax. So I think Matt's gone right down the middle here. I'm actually leaning more towards you can't do this sort of thing. But if you do this sort of thing, let the readers know that it's a hoax somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that, although how effective would it have been if he had, right? Like, you get into that catch-22 and go, you know, it's very similar to the paid links debate that you can enter into and go, okay, but if we put this, you know, rel equals no follow on the link, now it's lost its value. So, you know, basically telling people how effective a tactic would this have been if at the end of the story they said this was all fake, it wouldn't have been effective. So, you know, would they do that? From Google's standpoint, I totally get it. It is sort of false advertising, and you're attracting links under false pretenses.
How about April Fool's jokes?
Well, and they do them. And I can't remember which site it was on, but I was when looking up this one, and they're sort of going, yeah, and if you do an April Fool's joke, do you have to pull it down after so it can never be treated as news again, right, and stuff like that. Google doesn't. They keep theirs up, but then theirs are usually so over the top that it's pretty clear that, you know, they're not going to provide free Internet access. You just got to flush this little device down your toilet, and there'll be somebody at the bottom, you know, collecting it and hooking you up.
Damn, that's what happened to Google's Web Accelerator.
Pardon me?
That's what happened to Web Accelerator. Right, and Google coupons, too. You're right about that. And also, on April 1st, yeah, I mean, shit, it's April 1st, you don't trust anything anyway, right?
Exactly.
You know one thing I don't trust? I don't trust time.
I know.
Time is too weird anyway. It's a philosophical concept to begin with, but it's also a very real thing and very real constraint points. And we got, like, maybe 2 minutes, 3 minutes on the outside if Brasco feels like extending us those extra seconds. We're not going to be able to say much about Yahoo and all the weirdness that's happening over there, which is kind of too bad because we were going to have Yahoo guests on today, but it didn't quite turn out that way. Okay, I've been told we have 2 minutes. That's it.
Okay.
Period. Some of the stuff I've learned about Yahoo and the mess that's happening over there this week. You know what? Carl Icahn's made $120 million thus far. If he was to sell all of the shares today that he's bought, he'd probably. That's kind of good. Good for him.
Kind of. If he all of a sudden decided to dump all those shares, though, the value would go down. So.
Well, yeah, and he'd be disappointing the approximately 30% of shareholders in Yahoo who are now on the dissension side, on the rebel side. And it's kind of funny seeing the way this is breaking down, you know, like the rebels and the establishment. Well, in this case, it's kind of like looking at it in a mirror, right? Because, like, the establishment is Jerry Yang and Dave Filo, who really haven't been, like, establishment characters in my mind, and the rebels in this case are Wall Street investors like Carl Icahn, who is, like, you know, you want to use 60s terminology, that dude is the establishment.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, no, it is funny. And I mean, the game just gets, well, I'll call it a game, gets more interesting with potential breakups of sections of Yahoo and sales of individual pieces to Microsoft and, you know, other pieces I'm sure will be, you know, happily bought by other people who couldn't afford to purchase an entire Yahoo entity. You know, it does. I'd love to have had 20 minutes, half an hour, full hour to chat with you about it, but I have a feeling Brasco's tearing his hair out right now and going, you've got 10 seconds left.
Yeah, something like that. It's okay. It's really sad. It's stupid. Poor Panama. Yahoo. Wow. It's like watching a good friend with a hangover walk into wood shredding, wood chipper or something. It's just sad. I think we got to wrap it up, Dave.
We do. Good analogy.
This was a fun show. I can't believe we spent an hour just talking. Weird. Folks, this has been Webcology on webmasterradio.fm. This is Jim Hedger from MetaMen.com and Dave Davies from Beanstalk Dash Inc. We'd like to thank Brasco, our phenomenal producer, and the fine folks over at webmasterradio.fm for giving us this time. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned. There's some great content coming up on the network.